All right, hey, it's Scott Herf. It's an interesting episode this week. It's Nick Fogel, my co-founder, business partner, CEO of Churnkey. We're talking about bootstrapping companies today, scaling a team, scaling a product, all kinds of off-the-cuff commentary, the raw stuff you don't usually get. So here we go.
Being raw, do I need to get closer to the camera? We got like very close up of Scott.
Yeah, I know. You gotta get. It's like what is it? I'm gonna date myself here. The Real World, like MTV, with the
that's right. That's it.
You know, they
it's
would
the
like
confession room.
Yeah, it would park you like right up close.
Yeah, it feels very intimate, and I'm seeing it back a little bit. I don't have the lighting set up.
Yeah, you know, it's just your mood today.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's jump into it, man.
Yeah, man. I thought we were just talking before this. It'd be cool to just talk about like where Churnkey has been in the last year. And we like to do these things where we will write memos kind of every quarter, every half of the year, and then revisit those. You know, it's the goals we want to achieve, and then look back at them and go, wow, we actually blew past those or we didn't. So we went from almost being out of cash, I think in December. Was that December? Nick keeps
yeah,
the books.
Yeah, December, so. December through February, we got yeah. to a pretty low point. We had to like, we actually had to let go of an employee who had become a great part of the team, and even our contractor. We were like, all right, we're on halftime, just to make sure that we had that little bit of a cushion balance there.
Yeah,
but yeah, that was. I don't know that it was necessarily stressful. It just felt tight, and I think we were prepared. We knew that was coming. And we knew that we needed to take action and just like be ready for that. So, yeah, it wasn't all that stressful. It was just like, let's free up the cash. And the great thing about yeah. a business like Churnkey is the growth is pretty predictable. And we knew a year before that, like we're going to hit profitability at roughly this point. I think we actually hit profitability 1 or 2 months sooner than we projected. So that was cool.
I think the thing that I remember from that those days, excuse me, is it felt, even though we were still going, growing revenue, going the right direction, you have this turmoil in beneath the surface that is uncomfortable. And it's like the impatience to be profitable again, or like, do we expand too fast? You're second guessing all these decisions, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is tough.
And in hindsight too, we did some deep dives into like, you know, where did we go wrong on spend? Like we knew that we had this cash. We wanted to spend it as part of that initial investment we had. And we were like, yeah, let's build out all these billing provider integrations. And some of those did not yield the returns we expected them to. And those were really expensive to build and maintain.
Yeah.
So, and you know, we've always had kind of that moneyball approach to building product and features, kind of borrowed from the last company we bootstrapped and lessons we learned at a venture-backed company we were at. And I think, it served us well, but when we had the cash, it was like, well, you know, let's go ahead and do that. And I think learning from that, now we have more of a, I wouldn't say we're getting away from risk taking, but we're going to look more at the data before deciding what to build.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing we have. So, I mean, just to continue on the perspective setting, you know, we've grown revenue over 300% since then. We've doubled, maybe even tripled our product footprint. So we have a lot more surface area, but we did that because we found product market fit when all these things talk to each other. And in this case, that's voluntary churn and involuntary churn and all the connective tissue in between. And so we just have so many more data points to look at now versus, oh, we live on your cancel button. That's it.
Right.
Just yeah, it's a lot more intake.
You know, and I think Rob Walling says it pretty well. He talks about product market fit as a continuum. It's not like we've arrived and now we're done. So if I were to look back, like, do you have a sense of when we started to really get that product market fit? Would you say last fall is probably around where it really started to click?
I think so. I mean, and now that added to the distance for me because we were getting better responses. We were our batting average was improving, but then it's like, oh wait, we have to let go of some people or one person. But it was that weird transition period where I think we really buckled down. You went over to completely lead sales. That was a huge transition. So engineering didn't have as many eyes and ears going there. And we just all learned to trust each other a lot more because we were just spread way too thin.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was also a part where we were just like really, really treading a fine line between burnout and just, you know, working hard, doing what we've got to do. I mean, we were definitely burned out. Like there's no mistaking that. We were all burned out. Maybe we're still a little burned out just from, you know, it's not like we're taking breaks or going, you know, saying, hey, let's hire all these people and then kicking back a bit. It's kind of, we're at like a point in the company's life where now we do have some ability to scale and start delegating out some tasks. But, you know, it's just like, well, instead of just being task oriented all day, it's like, well, we're in more meetings now and we're looking at hiring. And it's funny how that, you know, you have to be proactive and vigilant to kind of maintain that balance and trying to avoid burnout before it happens. And you're like fully toast.
Right. And you and me both hate meetings. So it's interesting being the ones initiating the meetings.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, one thing with meetings, my perspective changes depending on what I feel that I need to be doing with the business. I think when I transitioned to taking over sales September, October of last year, I had to be in meetings all day pretty much for demos. Yeah. And as I was like, all right, well, sales is what I'm doing now. I got to a point where I didn't mind meetings because I no longer had these giant discrete engineering tasks that I'm working on. So it's like, well, you know, if Rob and Ignacio are working on most of the engineering,
yeah,
I don't have to like wrap up meetings to get into like a flow state. I can get into my sales flow state and be okay. It still drains me somewhat, probably more than like a super extroverted sales guy. But, you know, I actually enjoy doing sales demos now. Didn't think I'd ever enjoy that.
Yeah, I remember you first telling me that and just seeing the success you were having on close rates and whatnot. It kind of had to like wrap my head around that a little bit because I don't know. I think as product first people were adverse to the idea of sales, like, oh, your product should sell itself. But in a way, ours started doing that. It's a complex thing. It's a complex product. It needs multiple levels of buy-in, adoption, you know, whatever.
You know, an interesting thought is like, this is a very human-centric product, right? We sell to B2B, but our product touches the end user for all of the organizations that we serve. And when you think about that, it's like, well, this is a very personal product. We should have a personal touch, or at least a human touch, with a lot of our prospective customers. And when I do these demos, I think a lot of times, particularly because we deal with churn, which is a painful topic, customers and prospects are just, they love the idea that somebody's in their corner and somebody is going to bat for them. And that like the turnkey team has got this. It's not just some automated software solution where we're going to give them our credit card and then, you know, we're on our own. Like we're in the corner fighting these battles with them, doing check-ins, being proactive, reaching out, you know, shared Slack channel, just asking them how they're doing. And I think that's what's really helped with our close rate and product market fit. There are, you know, some elements of that that don't scale, but I mean, that's part of what we're hiring to do is to make sure that we can still deliver that white glove boutique style service and continue to grow at a increasing rate.
Yeah, that's one thing that's helped me. And for those who don't know who are listening or watching, so Nick is basically ops, you know, overall strategy, sales, engineering, you know, take your pick of any of those. That's Nick. I'm in product design, marketing, copywriting, show stuff, as if you've listened to this before. And so one thing that's helped me get through, kind of punch through the usual design or marketing barriers when you're designing for a B2B SaaS product, you know, you don't really think about the humanity of it all, but we're helping people handle very, very touchy problems. Like, hey, your payment's failing. I'm going to block your access to my product. I mean, that's not a pleasant experience, you know, or can easily not be a pleasant experience. So it's remembering that yeah, these are very, very potentially sensitive situations, both on the customer side, and then internally in companies too, where, oh, how are we doing on churn? Or why are people so mad, you know, about this, that, or whatever? Why are they canceling? They're not comfortable interactions, or typically, you know, have not been.
When I was first thinking about Turnkey and like making it a separate company after we'd experimented within Wave, I thought of us a lot as like a mediator. You know, it's like there is this really crazy middle ground. And it's just like my background being in economics, I always thought of this as an economic problem where, you know, a business's end users have some reason why they're leaving. There's always a reason. And businesses aren't doing enough to find what that reason is and see if maybe is there a middle ground that would keep you around long term. And we kind of step into the middle of that somewhat. Mm-hmm. Anything that deals with money can be awkward for both businesses and the end user. And we're kind of a nice mediator in between that to help the customer get what they're hoping to have and make them happier long term. And the business is still able to bring in that revenue, even though sometimes they may give up a little bit in the short term via pause or a discount or something. It's kind of an interesting way to think about product as, you know, mediation.
Yeah. I mean, so many people don't like conflict, right? I remember I was traveling as a young kid and, you know, you go in America, we don't really have this. I mean, maybe farmers markets, but not really. So I don't know. I'm buying some, souvenir thing. And, you know, the guy says $20 and it's like clearly not $20 worth. And so you put yourself out there and, you know, how about $7? And, you know, then you get comfortable with that conflict, whether it's put on or not. But, you know, I think that we can take away that feeling of conflict. And if it's a third party handling this stuff, it's like having a neutral, I'm going to reuse your word mediator, but like having a neutral party, like let's find a better deal for everyone. I think it's powerful.
Yeah. The whole idea of haggling being such an ancient form of commerce, right? I mean, every transaction you could potentially have haggling, and we standardize pricing to prevent that because at scale, it's difficult. You can't have that interaction at scale, but that's essentially what we do is we allow people to, you know, extract the maximum amount that a subscriber is willing to pay and the business is willing or able to keep a lot of that profit. So yeah, I often think back to the basis of like, what is Turnkey? Like, what are we actually doing? And it gets me really excited about the future because as you get deeper into the end of the customer lifecycle, there's so many rich opportunities as we start thinking and moving backward in that lifecycle. Yep. Like our voluntary churn product cancel flows can help inform failed payment recovery. And reactivations, which is coming any day now or maybe in a few weeks, tie that directly to cancel
flows. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I guess this is going out soon, but I've already told a lot of customers, I think, about reactivations coming.
We can also cut that too.
Yeah. Well, this should be a bonus for anybody who listens to these or watches these that we are unfiltered and drop hints that you would otherwise miss. So, I'm just thrilled right now about where we are as a company. From a product point of view, like I think we've built something that is truly outstanding, and that's what our customers are saying. And then just the recognition we have in the market, you know, we're going up against competitors that are 50 to 100 times as big as us and have raised, 20 to 50x more than us. And mm-hmm. we're winning those deals. And I think it just speaks to the deep empathy we have because we've sat in their chair before. Like we know what they're dealing with when it comes to churn. And we're building the product we wish we had, and then some, and listening to customers. And it helps that all of us are skilled operators with successful exits and experience before, helps us to move fast. But yeah, I couldn't be happier with where we are as a company and team and product, given our relative size and, you know, capital that we've raised.
I remember being, when we first launched too, we were just doing cancel flows and, you know, to this day, cancel flows don't have a great reputation because of who used them and how they use them. Like I think of internally, we think a lot about Amazon and their fight with the FEC and, you know, shady practices. And they've, they used to switch button colors on you and all these kind of crafty things to keep you subscribed to Audible or whatever. And I was just, it just occurred to me, like, so for those listening, Nick and I were on the founding team of a company called Casa, which basically created a category of personal Bitcoin security. And that was an uncomfortable place to be too at the time, because Bitcoin, isn't that what you use for drug deals on the internet? And like, you know, why would you want to carry around this stuff on you and whatever? And there was skepticism about the tech and stuff. So we built that into a known brand. Now we're doing this in another kind of touchy, uncomfortable space. They could easily dip into dark patterns, easily dip into shady practices. But, you know, then our background is also mobile consumer apps and consumer apps in general, and, you know, being user friendly, customer centric, like all these things are kind of working together to, I'm not really sure where I'm going with this, but you know, we've been able to live in that world of discomfort on top of starting a company, and push through that to make it like, hey, this is not only a greenfield space, but you can be a good operator, a good person, a good force, and still help, you know, all these people end up better off than they were, right?
Yeah, it's both scenarios were kind of creating a new category.
And yeah.
It was hard to sell at first because people aren't aware that something like this exists. There's a need and there's latent demand, but you have to like explain that, market it. There's hesitation, there's fear. And that first year, like after we had the Wave exit, we went public with Turnkey, and we were having a lot of conversations, and we had that great story about like how we were able to achieve this exit by dealing with churn and, you know, talking about all the problems we'd had. And we got so much pushback from other founders that were like, you know, this is great, but I feel like this is a dark pattern, or like, I don't want to get in the way of my, you know, end users leaving. And, you know, the thinking there has totally changed. I don't have those conversations anymore. It is very rare that somebody approaches the product with that kind of skepticism. Even, you know, when I'm reaching out directly to somebody, it's just amazing how quickly attitudes can shift as people get more comfortable with new paradigms, new ways of doing business. And I think another thing that's helped us is just your background and consumer focused design makes it so quick, easy, and end user friendly. You know, it's the difference in clicking cancel and leaving right away versus clicking cancel and being done in 12 seconds. You know, it's not meaningful to drive any kind of frustration.
Well, we've had arguments with potential customers around that, who really, we have an opinion about how the experience should be, and that can turn a lot of people off. But, you know, we've stuck to our guns, and for good reason, because it could easily descend into something that is very not desirable. And I've seen that on mobile apps. You know, the I just posted one in our product channel last night. There's a try this product for 7 days. Okay, so it's a, you know, try it for free or try for a very low price. But it cost us $9.73 to cover our expenses for the trial period. And you can't put price on whatever. So choose the amount you're comfortable with, $1 or $9.73, which is labeled most popular. I mean, that is very clever. And I've seen stuff like that designed in the room, but it's also like, dude, really? I mean,
are we seeing like the level of emotional manipulation? And
I know.
I'm really curious to know how that works. You know, the behavioral economics and psychology that go into that. I'd love to have some data around that.
Right. But it's, you know, we could have easily felt the pressure to do that stuff. And, you know, hell no, though. That was our response. I want to talk, we've been talking a lot internally about burnout and how to stay, you know, knowing that a startup is full of things you don't want to do to get to what you do want to do. And I feel like we're finally pushing into where that's starting to be possible, but it's a messy transition. So I thought we'd talk about that real quick. So you're sort of rolling out of founder-led sales.
Yeah. And sort of. You know, the update there too is Baird had a leave for 12 to 18 months. It was an extended leave, original, you know, co-founder. Had paternity leave, was building a house, you know, Zubtitle is another business he has running, was requiring a lot of time. He stepped away. We made a hire to replace that. I did not want to do sales. You know, I was kind of forced into sales. Now it's the best thing that could have ever happened, I think.
Right.
In terms of just getting the reps, understanding the market, the product better than I would have, you know, 150 demos later. But for scaling, like Baird was able to come back in March or April, like right as we were kicking off a small angel round that we were doing among some customers and strategic partners, and take a lot of the demos off my plate, get fully ramped back up on the product. And that's been huge to have a co-founder who had to step away, come back. You know, we all worked it out as a team. Everybody's got, I think, a really great outcome out of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, in terms of scaling, like it's nothing better than having your co-founders and equity owners to be leading these different areas of the business. So Baird has been able to kind of step back into sales. We're actively ramping up our sales force, and we understand the sales process so well now from doing it ourselves and just being in the trenches for, you know, the better part of a year and having so many conversations that, you know, we know what we need now, but it's still complicated. Yep. To go and hire and find the right people that can put things into practice. And we haven't mastered it yet. You know, we've got a good understanding of it, but part of it's finding these early hires that can be part of a startup. They're not just looking to rest and invest at a big company. You know, they're willing to look at a greenfield problem and say, well, you know, this would be a better approach to prospecting, to strategic outreach. Yeah. And then on the other side of it is like, we have 155, 160 paying customers right now. Like a lot of those are really large organizations, and we want to be able to give each of these customers the attention that we believe they deserve. And that means we sell a customer on turnkey. We don't want to just turn them loose. Like we want to actively help them. And sometimes we have customers that have been with us for a year and they haven't made any updates or optimizations. So we're investing money back into customer success and making sure that we're like proactively checking in on customers, which isn't something that, you know, just the four of us could handle. So that's like a big area too. That I'm realizing we tried it and I had all this head knowledge. Yeah. We were basically playing hot potato with different accounts and being very reactive. Which for what we do, like it works to our disadvantage and our customers' disadvantage. When we're not proactively finding revenue that's on the table that companies could be bringing in. So yeah, I think that's a big realization I've had. It's been challenging because I have so much undocumented head knowledge from, you know, running point on most customer success and sales. And it's just been a process of like taking the contents of my brain. I haven't even written it out. And I don't think I've even distilled some of those thoughts. You know, when you've just got like a large body of knowledge, people call that, you know, I guess wisdom when you're old and you can see a situation and say, this is what you do. Not saying I'm overly wise, but there's all this.
Nick the gray beard.
Yeah, for real. Getting some grays in here. That's why I shave more often now. But yeah, like we have all these internal pieces of knowledge that we haven't done a good job of documenting. It's like, we know it if we see it. And that's a growing pain too, is like getting things documented, empowering other team members is scary, right? Because we have this tendency, you want people to do things as you've done them because it's what worked, but you also have to hire people that you trust. Those are just some of the roles we're hiring, you know, business. Engineering is another big one. Like we're ramping up on the engineering front and have a, growing a pretty massive team. So a lot to be excited about, but a lot of, you know, trade-offs there too.
I know we were joking yesterday where there's a screenshot of a engineering call now, and it's like bigger than the entire company was back in December.
Yeah, for real.
It's a weird, I think it's good that you're really good at documenting these moments where you look back and the timestamp is 8 months ago and it's like, whoa, that was where we were, or that happened then, or I don't know. I think that's one thing I really appreciate about how you keep track of things, that we can look back with, you know, and it really sets the scene, right? Who was there? Mm-hmm. Oh, I was wearing that shirt then or whatever. But yeah, I was going to ask you too, and I know you got a sales call coming up, speaking of sales, but how have you been offloading the knowledge to Robert. So Robert is a new member of the team, handling some customer success and help desk things and whatnot.
You know, it's funny to share a little bit more about the team structure right now. The four founders, we all worked together at previous startups, have had exits, you know, between us together. Each of us has a minimum of 5 years work experience before we, you know, got rolling with Turnkey. And as we've been hiring, roughly all of our engineers, with each other, you mean? Yeah, with each other. And then as we've been hiring these new roles outside of the founding team, these are all people that were at previous companies. Like everybody right now that's working together, we worked together at previous companies. And that's such an amazing way to hire. And it also, I think it, you know, I'm going to brag about us, but I think it says a lot about us as individuals that people see Turnkey, they see us and they're like, you know, we want to work with what we want to do what you guys are doing. We want to be part of it. Early on, it happened a lot and we couldn't afford to. So it's nice to be in a place where we're still focused on capital efficiency, but we can actually do that. And yeah, back to Robert, you know, in startups, you need generalists. You need people that can look at different areas. And, you know, a little bit about Robert, like he speaks fluent Mandarin, which is totally random. He was at, you know, in mainland China for like 4 or 5 years, but he has, he was at Bill Me Later doing like basic dunning and like recovery at Bill Me Later. He was at Flexport, you know, he's got this deep experience, but we were at Costco together. So we needed somebody who could work across the entire stack, but who could also really own customer relationships and make sure that we're dedicating the resources there. So that onboarding has gone well because we have a rapport. We've worked together before. I know how he works, and it's gone smoothly in a lot of regards. I think one change that he'll make, and he's probably already made it in his head, but going from a large Series A funded startup with 40 people back to a, you know, 6 to 10 person startup is
try to get out, but they pull me back in.
Exactly. But it's more fun, right? Like I don't, you know, we'll look back talking to timestamps in 2 years and we've got 50 people on the team and we're going to be like, oh man, have to walk that one back. But,
I know.
Yeah. And you know, that's interesting too. I can get nostalgic at times. I'm bad at celebrating wins. I'm bad about setting goals and then celebrating when we achieve them. It's kind of like, oh, we did it. All right, guys, let's, you know, get on to the next thing. That's one thing I'd like to do better because B2B is very different than B2C. Our previous businesses have been more B2C. And you don't have as many wins. The wins you do have are bigger, but you really do have to zoom out for morale and for just avoiding burnout. Like you have to look at the long game. I know Josh Pigford at Barometrics had a lot of posts about like that, you know, trough of sorrow and like that long, you know, slow ramp up for B2B SaaS. And we've definitely felt that. I mean, unless you've got the giant cash injection from VC, I think that's par for the course.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how, I don't know, I think culturally as co-founders, we are very just, you know, we're focused in on what we love to do. You know, we get the success. It's like, great. What's the next one? And so it has been an interesting development as we add more people to say, be way more deliberate about, hold up, we just shipped something massive, you know, let's go chill for a day and just reflect on that. Or,
yeah,
you know, I don't know, just being more deliberate because we each have this kind of shared language that we've built up over time working together. And that's why it's been so great to have Robert just, you know, slip in and it's so natural. But, you know, as we expand outside of the core circles, it's, you know, you got to be more deliberate about everything, which is something I struggle with.
And actually getting organized and having standard procedures and like ways of doing things, all the boring stuff that, you know, most companies eventually have to do. Well, we're kind of at that stage now where we do have to spend more time on the boring stuff. But ultimately, you and I just had like a little catch up call yesterday where we were just doing a check in with you, seeing like, how are you feeling about everything? And it's interesting because we all have tasks and things that we're really great at and things we really like doing. And then there are tasks that we don't like doing. And as bootstrappers, there's constantly that feeling of like, okay, well, you know, what can we effectively outsource that we don't like doing? And you acknowledge, you were like, well, I mean, we're always going to have to do tasks that we don't want to do. Like that's just part of running a business.
Yeah.
But there are these efficiencies you gain by bringing on other people who are better at the task and they get more enthusiasm and joy out of doing something like bookkeeping, which I do. I'm like, I hate bookkeeping, but you know, it's like, well, let's outsource that. Let's find a contractor, free up your time. Legal stuff too. Like I'm a lawyer, so I end up having to draft all the agreements and everything. There's a reason I'm not practicing law. I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. It saves us money,
you get that reminder every time you draft a contract or whatever.
Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't want to be doing this. So that's another thing that, you know, getting to profitability and, you know, being able to do these things is kind of a nice treat is the way I see it. I don't take it for granted that we're able to do that now. So, yeah, that's something that's been cool lately.
I mean, it's a good place to end. Yeah. It's been fun. We'll do more of these. I think we'll call them interludes or whatever.
Yeah, I like it too. And you know, maybe even quarterly would be nice to have more frequent updates. We went all the way back to, I guess, a year ago, really, was kind of where we started this one. But yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, man. I'll see you in Slack.
All right, dude.